This is episode 53 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. And on this episode, I get to talk with Eddie Campos Jr., also known as Ed, but in a minute I'll find out what he would prefer for me to call him on the podcast on this episode. But I've been fortunate enough to interact with Eddie on Twitter mainly, and then recently on Facebook. He recently went to ISTE, so I'm sure he's got a lot to say about that. But in my mind, when I think of Eddie, I've got the California crew on the back of my head. So, like, I know he's connected with a handful of people that I met when I got to go to the Google Teacher Academy in 2014. And he does a lot of stuff with Q. He attends their workshops. He may even be a Q presenter. I don't know. I'm going to ask him about that. But so when I think of him, I think of the West Coast tech integrators and the wild stuff that they do out there. And I was reading up about Eddie before I asked him if he wanted to come onto the podcast. And I read some things that really, really resonated with me. And I thought it'd be great for him to tell his story. And so we'll dive into a little bit of that as well. So episode 53 belongs to Eddie Campos Jr. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Roland. I really appreciate being on. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. What do you prefer I call you Eddie or Ed?
Actually, it doesn't really matter. It's the only reason I do both is when I was growing up, I was known as Eddie, you know. And then when I started working, I figured I needed to be an adult, and Eddie didn't seem like an adult name, so I put on my business cards Ed. But most of my friends, like, it sounds good coming from you, so I'd say we're friends. You can call me Eddie. I mean, I feel like people that know me well and grew up with me call me Eddie. Most of my adult professional people call me as Ed, but then they prefer to call me Eddie later on. So we can go by Eddie.
Okay, very cool. I'm honored that you would refer to me as a friend. I want to know, what would Briggs call you? Would he call you Eddie or Ed?
Man, that's a good one. We actually we've been staying at an Airbnb. We rented an Airbnb house. He calls me Eddie. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I needed to do the Briggs barometer test.
There you go. That's funny.
Okay, so I'm not really sure where I want to dive in here in terms of our conversation, because there's so many awesome entry points. I think what I'll do is I will start with, I was reading your blog, and I was reading the About Me page, because, you know, it's a great place to start when you want to kind of get a feeling for somebody. And I read about your journey, and I was like, wow, I want to talk to this guy. So tell us about your journey in terms of education. You went to UCLA, and then you were out in the world working in corporate America. And then you realized somewhere along the way that teaching was for you. And I don't want to give too much away, but I want to say this, that when you said on your About Me page that you grew tired of the character of people in corporate America, it was a sad moment to hear you say that or to read it, because I kind of get a vibe. I get a vibe of someone with your passion and someone with your drive, based on what I know of you and what I've read about you, to be stuck in that kind of realm, working out there and doing maybe a job that wasn't as fulfilling as what teaching is doing for you. So I know I just blabbed a lot. I said a lot, but what I really would, I'd love it if you told us a little bit about your journey in the education system, university days kind of thing, and then what brings you to teaching.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, because I think I set that About Me page up a few years ago. I always forget what's on there, but so I grew up like in California, like you said. I grew up in a really small town in Central California, so it's not any of the glamorous, you know, Los Angeles, living by the beach or something, or the Bay Area, Silicon Valley. I grew up in Central California in Tulare County in a little farming community called Early Mart. Mm-hmm. It's, I think the population is like a couple of thousand. legal population. But a farming community. I grew up there. My grandmother ran a panaderia, Mexican bakery there. So that was all of our family's first job, working in the panaderia. That supported a lot of the field workers that would come and get coffee and a piece of bread in the morning before they went to work in the fields. So I definitely got my work ethic there from my grandmother, from my family. Was lucky enough to go to UCLA. Education was instilled as very important to us from my grandmother on down to my mother and father. And then real lucky to go to UCLA. I loved UCLA. I mean, that was like a huge culture shock, but just amazing opportunity. It's like going to it was pretty much the ultimate college experience. Like I see it as, you see movies about college, and that's pretty much what I feel like I got to live, like part of a movie. Everyone's life is a movie, and but the college experience, some people go to commuter colleges. I don't really get that full college experience. I figure like UCLA was just an amazing place, beautiful Southern California. I met all kinds of amazing people, all kinds of different kind of people, which really was the biggest education, coming from a little town where it was predominantly Mexican and Filipino, but just culture shock with, I think my first roommates were Egyptian, Iranian, African-American. So just like really getting to know a lot of different people, it was awesome. And I think that's what one of the main things I loved about UCLA was the campus being so diverse. I just kind of like I majored in math because I always it kind of came easy for me. I could just hang out at the beach, I'll be honest, and read the math. I had a gift for reading math textbooks, which is, I don't know. I mean, I could teach myself because my university, my UCLA university math instructors weren't necessarily the best teachers. I mean, those guys were brilliant researchers and brilliant minds, but the art of teaching another human being, it was we know a lot about the lectures, and the pedagogy of lecturing and stuff. So I learned to be very good at reading math textbooks and teaching myself. So and then I had a friend. I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So when you don't grow up with a lot of money, I think, in your little small town, money seems like a big issue to you. It seems bigger. Mm-hmm. And you're real self-conscious of it. At least I was, I felt like it was something that I definitely didn't have that I knew I needed to have. I thought I needed, I saw kids and friends that had money, and so that became equated with my goal. So it's like, okay, I have to have a job that has money because I have to be able to buy stuff and have this car and this like that. And then, so one of my friends when we were at UCLA that I took math classes with, my friend Gabriel, he's like, hey, we should take these programming classes. He goes, we should learn how to code. And this was like this was pre Google days. So this was like I graduated in 99. So I think it was like late 97, early 98. I didn't even have a computer. I used to just spend my time, at one of my friend's apartments typing stuff or in the computer lab. But when my buddy Gabriel said, hey, we need to learn how to code and this and that. And I said, what is that? And he's like, people are getting paid good money to code. And this, so my friend so-and-so got this contract and a signing bonus. And I'm like, well, that's what we need to do. So I started taking programming classes, me and Gabriel. We ended up getting a minor in programming. And it worked out that we both got job offers like the next year because right around that time, it was like the huge e-commerce boom. I mean, it was like 1988, 1999. So it was like they were just throwing money at people. So a lot of these companies would interview at UCLA and I ended up getting a job with a company out of the Bay Area called – had a couple of offers, but chose this one company called PeopleSoft. It ended up being bought out by Oracle later on. But in hindsight, looking back, and I really fell in love with that company because of the culture of it. It was very much the culture of what you see, Google and, like even in the movie The Internship and stuff like that, because you could go to work – you know, in your shorts. You can bring your dog to work. You wear flip flops, and they had, like, you know, free soda, bagels, and you know, margaritas on Fridays. And they had a game. They had a game room on every floor in the headquarters. They had a basketball court in the middle of the headquarters, and showers down in the first floor, so you could work out there. It was just it was a really cool environment. I was like, man, this is cool. So it was kind of like leaving college, but you were still kind of in college. You know, you were just making a lot more money. So I did that. It was really cool. And, you know, as everyone would say, by everyone's standards, like, oh, I was a success. You know, I was a success. I got this amazing job. I got to travel. Coming from a little town was amazing because I love seeing new things and just being able to travel. I did that for about 3 years, and, you know, it was a software consultant for PeopleSoft, and I think it took a little bit of a toll. It was like, oh, this is not as fun as like, you know, coding with my friends, in the computer lab back in college. And, it was a lot of time, just solitary working on, you know, on coding and working on a program or a project. And I felt like I was just losing weekends. And then kind of like what I mentioned in the About Me page, some incidents happened, but I just started to realize that people that you work with aren't necessarily your friends. And the loyalty, I'm a very loyal person, and I grew up, you know, where I grew up and the friends that I have, like, loyalty is the thing. And, you know, just so I started learning a lot about people's motivations and why they were there. And then I, you know, it just slowly started dawning on me, like, wow, you know, I'm making this awesome amount of money that I thought was going to make me happy. But I was kind of surrounded by, I'm not trying to knock, you know, a lot of people, but I felt like we didn't have the same values. And what I really realized was that job was not something that I valued after all. I thought I wanted it. I coveted it. And then I had it, and it was a great experience to experience that, because not everyone is able to realize, oh, you know, I'm just going to pursue something that I actually enjoy doing. And then what really happened was 9/11 happened, and I worked with a bunch of consultants that were from New York, and they actually I forget what that flight number is, the one that went from JFK to SFO that they took down over it didn't make it to SFO, but they took it down. It was like flight 37 or something like that. They made a movie about it, but whatever that flight number was, my coworkers at the time, that was their flight that they took every Monday, that same number from JFK to SFO. But they took it the day before. They had just taken that flight the day before, and it did not make it. So kind of seeing that was a real eye opener. I was like, wow, I go, these folks, they, you know, folks in the building and stuff like that, they passed away just by going to work or getting on a plane. And then it really just, I don't know, it's weird that it impacted me like that, but I started thinking about, like, wow, if I passed away at work, what would I be known for? Like, what would I be remembered by? So I really started thinking about, and a lot of us would go out and hang out and go to the bar or something, have a couple beers. And we would just talk about, like, what would you do if you weren't doing this job? And what would you do? And some people were like, oh, I'd go to law school. I think I would go to law school eventually. Or, you know what, I think I'm going to, you know, sell real estate or something. And then for me, I was like, yeah, you know what, I always liked tutoring my friends, helping them with math, because they thought it was hard and I would make it easy for them. And I liked helping people and teaching people math. So then shortly after that, I just I quit that job and I said, this is just not for me anymore. And I moved back to the Valley, to Central California, and started substitute teaching and just kind of figured out what grade I wanted to teach, and then started teaching high school math. And that was like 13 years ago, but it's the best decision I ever made. That's for sure.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I took like a half, like a 50% pay cut, but it was totally worth it. You know what I mean? Like, and just realizing that and being able to go through that and realize it was a blessing.
I appreciate you telling us the story of where you started, you know, what you realized you thought you wanted when you were in university, then what you ended up getting, and then realizing that it really wasn't for you. I didn't know about the 9/11 stuff. That's pretty deep. I didn't know any of that. It's funny though. Well, it's funny how 9/11 is one of those things where we all remember where we were. We all kind of, we might have a connection to what it made us think about after it happened. So I appreciate you sharing that story. I didn't know about that part of it. But I could see how, you know, that would get you thinking. And when you said, you know, got you thinking about if you died at work, what would people remember you for? That's huge. That's pretty deep. So I'm glad that you could share that with us. I'm going to move to a little bit of a lighter subject.
Yeah.
But when you were talking about the... No worries. Yeah. I'm not sure how to kind of deviate away from that, but I'm just going to do it because you told us a story and now I have a flavor and other people have a flavor for what you're about, where you come from and what's important to you and what's not really important to you. And that pay cut, that 50% pay cut, that's huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess you did it when you were relatively young, but that's a big deal. And I remember those days, those e-commerce days where money was being thrown at people. I remember when I was going to university, I had friends say to me that, you know, they're like, you're a chump. You're going to go to school for 4 years and get a degree. I'm going to go to the community college, do a 1 year certification, and I'm going to be making large cash. And they did. They went, they got a 1 or 2 year Microsoft type certification. Then they were working for, startup companies that had a ton of money that were gone 3 years later. You know what I mean? So I remember getting my degree and they were all out of a job and I was just kind of starting my career kind of thing. I want to know, do you remember the first time you used the internet?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean,
that's okay.
I know it was at UCLA. I think it was like when we were using, when email first, you know, came out because, I know it had to be in the computer lab at UCLA. Okay. Yeah.
The other thing, okay, so that was something that caught my eye is your journey into education. The other thing that's caught my eye recently is this business of the Straight Outta Campos hashtag, which apparently is a few years old now, but to me it's new. So I don't know how I've been following you all this time and just discovered that attitude, that design recently. I know it's connected to your love of hip hop, but I would love to hear about hashtag Straight Outta Campos.
I was teaching. So I've taught like a couple different places, a couple different high schools in the Valley. The second to last school I worked at was an independent study high school. Mm-hmm. And one of my students, it was right around the time when the NWA Straight Outta Compton movie was coming out. And you know, I grew up, you know, I'm 40, so I grew up on hip hop music, you know, Beastie Boys, Run DMC, Wu-Tang, you know, NWA, all that stuff. So a lot of my students, I mean, I talk with them, you know, I just try and relate to them on music that they listen to, things like that. It's interesting that, you know, they still like a lot of the music that was cool when I mean, you know, they like Tupac, they like Biggie, and I'm like, wow, that's, you know, you guys weren't even alive back then, but it's good to see that quality lasts and has staying power. But so the movie was coming out, and we were just having a conversation in between classes or something, and some of the students were talking about the movie, and I think I had just seen the movie, and I went to go, me and some of my friends from middle school. They called me up. They're like, hey, we're all going to go watch the movie, you know. And I said, all right, let's go. So we went, and it was, like, just amazing. I mean, I love that movie. I thought it was so well done, the cinematography, the directing, the acting. I mean, the the casting was spot on. You know, Ice Cube's son looks exactly like him. The guy who they got to play Dr. Dre was spot on. But just and the way it was produced, the music, of course, the energy. So I was just like on that, you know, it kind of put me back in that mind frame. But I started looking at it through a different lens, too. Like, wow, look at these guys who, you know, there's a lot of people who might frown upon like, oh, my God, you're going to go watch that movie. I can't believe you're going to watch that type of movie. I'm like, but that's the American dream, really. After I saw that movie, I was like, these guys were growing up in a really horrible situation. And look at what they did. They made millionaires out of themselves by telling their story, telling their art, and showing people, giving people a window into their culture. You know, and I, when people frown upon it, I would say, well, why is Goodfellas so popular? You know, Martin Scorsese does the same thing. He just glamorizes mafia life as opposed to urban, you know, urban culture, urban hip hop, urban gang culture, maybe stuff like that. I go, but there's violence in both. It's just a window into that culture, and that's why we're fascinated by that. And when it's done really well, you know, like Scorsese, and I mean, I honestly think Ice Cube is one of, I mean, he's up there with just his storytelling, and I mean, look at the success he's had in movies. I just started thinking about Ice Cube too, and I'm like, look at that, he's transformed. You know, his whole lineage has changed because of his voice and his art. And look at his son is successful now. And, you know, and he's making movies and, you know, family movies and all that stuff. So I was having this really awesome conversation with my students and they were like, that's cool. You know, you're like, you like hip hop there. And they say, yeah, you're like straight out of Compos. And I was like, oh, that. And so I was like, that's funny. And they said, yeah, you should like print that out or something or try and make up a logo. And I said, oh man, you're onto something. So I Googled, I think they had like Beats by Dre had like a straight out of somewhere generator and you could put in your city or whatever. And I printed it out. And then I had some kid, I put it up and then some of my students were like, oh, can you print me one out? Print me one out too. And I'm like, what? You want to print this out with my name on it? And so it was crazy. Like these kids started asking me to print out the straight out of Compos little poster printed out, and they were putting it in their binder and this and that. And then I was like, wow, that's pretty interesting. I started thinking, maybe I must be doing something right. If these kids, like, who's going to put their math teacher's name on their binder? You know, like, so I said, these kids must be comfortable with me. And then when they loved it. You know, they were like, oh, they're like, when people ask us, what class did you come from? They're like, oh, I just came, I'm straight out of Compos right now. I just came. And I was, so it was really cool. I love those kids. I see those kids all around and I miss them. And they tell me that they miss me. And then when I ended up leaving that school, it was pretty sad. I was like, man, this is a miss these kids. And then some of them were like, you should print out some stickers of straight out of Compos to give them to us so we can remember you by. And I was like, done. I go, done. Like within a minute, I had ordered on Sticker Mule. And so it was really crazy. These kids were like, oh, I want one of those stickers. They were putting them on their skateboards, on their binders, and on their phone. I was like, wow. I was just like blown away. So that's how it starts.
That's quite the compliment, eh? To have kids show you that kind of respect and interest in you.
Yeah. I was stunned. I was definitely an honor and humbled. You know, it's like, hey, this is made it fun, made it something a little different, you know. So, and they gave me the nickname. So I always have to say that, like, I'm not like Kobe Bryant giving myself the nickname. Like Kobe calls himself the Black Mamba. You can't give yourself a nickname. So the students gave me the nickname, you know.
I noticed that somebody recently made you a Straight out of Compos, 3D printed, glow in the dark artifact. Was that Briggs that made that for you?
Yeah, that was Briggs, man. Briggs is the man, dude. He's he printed a badge for me a while back. Okay. And we went to Q, National Q last year, and I saw him geeking out with his New Matter 3D printer, and he was printing a badge up for him, and I was like, that's sick. And I said, hey, how much I'll pay you if you make one of those for me. And you know, Briggs, he's like, no, you're not going to pay me. So he made one of those and it was just a blue one. It had a Twitter bird. And then I accidentally left it in my car, and it got really hot and it got warped. So I messaged him, like, "Hey man, my 3D printed badge warped," and I said, "You know, can you get me another one and then I'll pay you." And he's like, "Oh," he goes, and I said, "Can you make this one black and white, kind of like my Straight Outta Compost logo?" And he started. I didn't know he was actually going to make that logo, and then I didn't know he was going to make it glow in the dark. So it was mm-hmm. like he just took it up another notch. But that's Brian Briggs. He's the man.
Right, that's what he does. I'm not going to call him the man anymore because I've asked him to come on the podcast several times, and he keeps brushing me off really politely. So after I talk to you, I'm going to hit him up again. I'm going to say, "Listen, Eddie was on. Eddie had no issue coming on. So can we do this again, Briggs? Can we try this again? We'll see." It's all because of Briggs that I have a podcast. So I don't know why I'm 53. I'm 53 episodes deep now. So I've laid a foundation. It's okay for him to jump in now and you know, talk to me about the work he does and how he's kind of influenced me. So that's just an aside. But when you called him the man, I tend to agree, but I'm gonna have to stop using that until he comes onto the podcast.
Yeah.
Eddie, tell us what generally motivates you day to day.
I don't know. I just, you know, what motivates me is the my friends, the people around me. You know, it's like, you know, when I started teaching, it was, I mean, teaching is hard. Teaching is not easy, you know, and, I thought, you know, oh, I'm going to move back from the Bay. I'm going to be like this, you know, beacon of light for the Valley and these small, you know, in these small agricultural towns. I'm going to be like Jaime Escalante coming, you know, teaching math. And then I realized, oh man, this job is hard. And, you know, you realize so much about how you have to earn so much of this stuff with these kids, you know, and you have to develop these relationships with these kids, but it just makes you a better human being. But I think like the first 10 years of my teaching career, I was kind of just going on instinct. I didn't really see much inspiration from other math teachers. Like I couldn't pinpoint a mentor and, you know, someone that I'm like, wow, I want to do like that. Other than like math teachers that I had when I was younger, but, you know, kind of trying to mimic things that they did. But it wasn't until I got involved in Q and then, actually it was at ISTE 2012 in San Diego. So before I had never been to any Q event, but I went to ISTE 2012 in San Diego. And I think the first session I went to was this guy named John Carippo, you know?
Yes.
And I was like, he was doing this, the digital Swiss Army knife with your iPad and Apple TV, and AirPlay. And he was, you know, John Carippo, he's walking up and down and he's like commanding this huge room with like a couple hundred people. And I'm like, who in the heck is this guy, man? I was like sitting in the back row, and I just kept moving up a little closer to the front, a little closer to the front. And before I knew it, like after it was over, I was just like walking up, trying to talk to this guy and saying like, man, like whatever this is, I want to be a part of this. Like you and your friends, because, you know, I just stayed in that room. I guess it was a Q strand all day, and I just stayed in that room, and every session was just amazing. I think it was like Alice Keeler was in there next. Who else was it? Nicole Delisio. And it was just like one thing after another. I was just, my mind kept getting blown. So it was interesting that my first ISTE experience was really my first Q experience, because I really just got plugged in a Q there. And then after that, I was like attending all of these Q things, and I mean, that's what inspires me, because now, you know, and then being on Twitter and just seeing the risk taking, the fearlessness, the passion and the innovation, and you're like, and the generosity, you know, which is totally contrast from corporate America days and stuff like that. And, you know, like even in some teaching circles where it's like information hoarding or lesson plan hoarding, you know, it's like, these are mine, but just these really generous, good-hearted people that just want education to improve for adults, for kids, that want our jobs to be easier. So that's the stuff that inspires me, because they teach me stuff just about being a better teacher, just about taking risks and how to think differently every day. So that's where I get my fire lit. Q and the Twitter.
Are you connected to Q? Like, are you a Q presenter?
Yes, I guess I. So I started off just like a junkie, probably just like attending every Q thing I could attend. Like Q Rockstar camps in the summer, which just like those were the big game changers. And then Carippo invited me to present at a Q Rockstar. So I think like the first time I got plugged in, that was like, I mean, when I started going to them pretty well, it was like 3-4 years ago. And then just in the last year or two, I've been what's called like a Q lead learner. So so when you present, I guess after you presented a couple, if someone recognizes like, hey, you're pretty decent at what you do, you get invited like an invitation to be a part of this Q lead learner network, which is like just a network of like presenters, speakers, and trainers for hire that Q can like outsource you. So they'll get like a district will want some workshops, and then you know we get like a email about, hey, this you know this district here in California, Northern California, wants some Google training with an emphasis on ELA and social sciences or something. So then some people will submit. So kind of. I've done that for the last like year and a half, 2 years. And then I think with, I just got a new job. So, but it's not a full-time position. So it's a 75% position, but the agreement was because this job didn't have enough, you know, it was like negotiated that I could still do side contracting stuff on my own and with Q and that it would be beneficial for both because the network of Q is what really, I mean, has helped me grow and share, give me a platform.
Right. And for people that don't know, Q stands for Computer Using Educators, which I would say is a West Coast organization, initiative. I'm not sure what to call it. I'm a Q member, so like I pay dues every year and I get the magazine and stuff. But because I was highly – like – I learned about Q shortly before I got to go out west to Mountain View to connect with some of those people, and it was and it still is an amazing network of people. Always very helpful, very innovative, you know, very innovative and very open and inviting. So I have a special place in my heart for Q. I know that. Couple of Canadian folks here in my area tried to have a Q Rockstar camp or whatever you want to call it happen here a few summers ago, and it just didn't work out. And I remember when that came up, I remember saying, "Hey, if there's anything I can do, like let me know. I would love to be part of that." And it just didn't work, which is unfortunate. But at least some people looked into it and they tried. But you're talking about a new position, which reminds me, and I don't know if this is the same position you're talking to, but you just recently made a connection with Brown University, and you're going to be doing some work with them. I would love to hear about that connection and what kind of work you're going to be doing.
Yeah, so through Q, well, not really through Q, but a while ago, I started teaching this class. I did an hour of code. You're familiar with the Hour of Code, right?
Yeah, I've done it with my students as well.
Yeah, and I think it was the first year that they did it, and I was like, "Oh, this is great!" And it was interesting because it was like, "Okay, I was a programmer before, you know, but I wasn't teaching. It wasn't on my radar to teach computer science, you know, until you know that huge movement started coming back up, and I was like, okay, and they just made it so easy. So I did the Hour of Code with my students, and then when we were done, I was like, man, that was so awesome. I want some more stuff for my students. So I started looking on code.org's website, and then I saw this third-party recommended curriculum. And it said Bootstrap It said coding video games using algebra. You know, I was like, oh, that sounds awesome. So so I called up the guy that said his name was Emmanuel Schanzer, called him up and I said, hey, I want to try and get trained in this program. I want to be able to teach this. So he invited me up that summer, and like this was like 3 years ago, I think, to San Francisco. They had come out to the West Coast, and so I went out there. I was actually at a Q Rockstar camp, but left early to attend this training, and I got trained in it, and I was just like, man, it was amazing. I love the curriculum. It just was just an amazing way to teach algebra concepts. You know, I mean, there's so much that I can go into. There's a whole other podcast that I can go into about what's wrong with the way we're teaching math and algebra and things like that. But this was just something I knew I had to teach. I came back and told my principal, I said, I need to teach this class. So I've been, I've taught that class for 4 years. So I went to this new school. I was just at a new school this last year, and part of my negotiation or wants were to be able to teach this class just because I believe in it so much. And so the class, I actually just realized that the curriculum was kind of based out of Brown University, and I just realized that out of this last year. So one of the leads, or Emmanuel Schanzer, one of the creators of the curriculum, he started messaging me around the middle of last year. I had just accepted this job with the school, and he asked if I'd be interested in becoming a trainer for the bootstrap team with Brown University. And I was like, wow, that sounds awesome. You know, so it's kind of like taking like the things that I used to love about my old job, the travel, you know, the flexibility. But now the work was something I'm even passionate about too. You know, it's like the math and the computer science. So I had already committed to this other school. So I said, you know what, maybe not this year, but I was asking like, will it be available next year? So he said, yeah, he goes, you know what, we're not really looking for anyone else, but we know that you're the person that we want to hire. So it's kind of like they kept the job and held it open for me. So so then this year, we've kind of just been talking and negotiating some things with the budget that they had for the position. And they love – it actually works out because it's a partial employment because they – and I kind of stressed to them like how important I think it was for me to keep this connection with Q, because Q is the network that I've been able to grow and spread grow the Bootstrap brand and raise awareness about it. So, so I just got hired. This actually just finished my first week of being employed by Brown University, which is crazy for a little kid from Early Mart, a little small farming town. To be, first of all, to go to UCLA was awesome. And then now it's like, okay, I didn't go to an Ivy League school, but now I get to say I work for one. So
I saw that and I thought it was cool. I wanted to hear what you had to say about that. It's these neat things that happen when you participate in opportunities that, you know, Q provides. And like you were saying, the network that that is made up or comes from the whole Q connection, it's wonderful. You know, like I said, those people are really open, really innovative, always pumping out stuff to help teachers do what they're doing and to do it better. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's been pretty awesome. I love the curriculum. I'm a huge believer in it, so this is really awesome. I get to share the Bootstrap algebra more and with other teachers, and along Bootstrap actually has a lot more curriculum in the pipeline coming through, like a data science curriculum, a physics curriculum. So it's like using computer science to teach these other and model these other concepts like physics and researching data through data science. So it's pretty awesome. It's a good time.
You know, I'm a little bit surprised that you don't have your own podcast. Is that ever something that you had considered?
You know what? I have. You know who's getting me to think about that is Brian Briggs, you know, because I – and actually my friend – I got to give a shout out to my friend Adam Juarez. who has his Twitter handle's at Tech Coach Juarez. He's a coworker of mine that I had the pleasure of working with in Orosi High School, the school I just left. He just got accepted to the Google Innovator Academy in
Sydney.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sydney. Yeah. So.
Cool.
But he was being able to work with someone as talented as him like every day, you know, because it's one thing being on Twitter, but when you get to like have lunch with someone every day and like bounce these ideas off of people and like put them into practice and test things out. So me and Adam, I really love the relationship that we've been able to establish and just kind of, real, especially for the Valley, you know, where I live, like we need more strong leaders and innovators. And he would always talk about, he's like, hey, you need to have a podcast called Ed Talks instead of TED Talks, do Ed Talks. I think that might be happening sometime soon. Since I've been hanging out with Brian Briggs up here this last week, I'm going to ask pick Brian and Ryan O'Donnell's brain about how to get this started, what kind of equipment to get a high quality podcast going on. So
I went to go follow Adam, and I see I'm already following him. So glad to be connected to him. Yeah, for sure. And be careful, because once Briggs helps you, he might be reluctant to come on your podcast and talk to you. So don't do anything that's going to jinx that. Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm warned. I consider myself forewarned.
I'm down to the last big question that I would love to ask you. And again, it's about motivation and inspiration. Okay. And it has to do with what you would tell someone if they came to you and they said to you that they weren't feeling inspired, they weren't feeling motivated, and they were looking to you to kind of give them something, lead them down the right path. What might you say to them?
If they were like a teacher or just anyone?
You can frame it any way you like. You can frame it as a teacher approaching you or whatever. I'd love to just hear your answer.
If it was a teacher, I would invite them to hang out with us in our local Q affiliate. We have local meetups all the time. You know, it's not as easy as saying, I would say like join Twitter, but Twitter is not, it's not the easiest thing to get into. I found, and especially for some folks, but you know, what is easy to get involved in is a conversation. And honestly, even non-teachers, like I found that I have friends and you know, and they're like, man, I love what you're doing. You know, people love education, whether you're a teacher or not. They love seeing kids doing things that are awesome. They love seeing teachers doing things that are awesome. They appreciate, even if you're not a teacher, they appreciate teachers going above and beyond. So I think when you see that kind of stuff, you know, and even if you're not in the business, in the industry, people are like, wow, I wish I had a teacher like that, or I wish my kid had a teacher like that. I think that gives people hope. You know, and they say, wow, I'm glad that there's these people out there working for us, you know, no matter what else is going on. You know, giving people options, because if they have kids, you know, they start asking some of us educational, you know, leaders to like, hey, what do you recommend, you know, some things that can keep my kid interested or learning about computer science or something like that. You know, maybe my kids' teachers are not as innovative, but what are some things that I can help them out with? Or maybe I introduce them to the Joe Bowler curriculum, and you know, the growth mindset research and stuff that Joe Bowler has. So, what's nice too is if you're just looking for inspiration, I say sometimes you got to disconnect and go for a hike. You know, go for a hike in some beautiful scenery. Go to the beach and just, you know, spend some time just, you know, pondering some stuff, I think. And then I think a lot of times you can get inspired by yourself, but you need to give yourself some time alone with your thoughts, you know, with a lot of the stimuli that's going on. And we're lucky enough to live like really close to the Sequoias and the Yosemites, and within a couple of hour drive of the beaches in Southern California. So that's what I would do. Or like, hey, jump in and take a road trip with me and my friends to Q Rockstar Camp, and you come back with your with your fire lit, you know?
Right. Yeah, I hear you. Thanks for that. I appreciate it, Eddie.
Wrong.
If people want to connect with you, what's the best way to do so?
Either on Twitter or email, you know, like, so all of my, handles are pretty much Ed Campos Jr. So if it's on Twitter, they could tweet me at Ed Campos Jr. My email is the same, Ed Campos Jr. at Gmail. On Instagram, at Ed Campos Jr. Voxer, same kind of stuff. So yeah, anything. And then, I mean, just, we're trying to get better together. I like contributing to this this network that we have. Like, I call it like one giant teacher brain. It's like one once one of us knows something, everyone knows something because they share it out, and you're like, oh cool, I just got a quick free tutorial about Flipgrid or about, you know, this new tool, you know. So yeah, connect and help us get you connected, and, you know, stay in touch with it.
Right on. It's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast. I'm really happy that you're very open to coming on, talking about your story, talking about what motivates and inspires you. And I'm looking forward to sharing this out with other people. And I'm looking forward to the new connections that I might make because I've connected with you. So I appreciate that. And I thank you very much for that.
Oh, thank you, Roland. I appreciate it. I'm honored to be on here. And I will not stop until I get Brian Briggs to be on your podcast. All right.
Awesome.
I just say that.
I appreciate that. I'm going to need some muscle, so I think you can help me out with that. Have a good one, Eddie.
All right, Roland. Hey, thank you. Have a good night.